guys, I'm Kristen, and this is Carla.
Hi!
Join us as we explore origin stories and fun facts, or something. Hi! We'll see if we actually...
You said facts with like three S's. Facts.
Facts, plural, and then plural again.
Hi, my friend. I just clap obnoxiously right off the bat.
Hello.
It feels like we haven't talked to each other in like 18 years.
I know. It's so only been weird. 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Like, how?
I know.
My brain's exploding. So I just sing
my
right away.
My brain's exploding too.
Why do I think listeners want to hear this? This untrained. Well, not entirely untrained. I did choir in grade 2.
So you're an expert is what you're trying to say.
Yeah.
How's it going? What's happening? What's the haps?
Nothing really.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my gosh.
I have nothing.
Meanwhile, over here, my whole life has like changed in the last like couple weeks. I went being like fully employed to now in a couple of weeks, I'm going to be totally unemployed. And it's been like the craziest whirlwind of my boss, the fork boss from last episode. We had somebody in our office got not directly in our office, but like our office adjacent who we interact with all the time, tested positive for COVID. And so my fork boss, she was like, okay, so she went home on Monday, and then she just never came back in again and didn't really talk to us.
Okay.
I mean, she told us she wasn't feeling well on the first, right. On Tuesday, and then didn't talk to us again. And I guess she told our head boss that she still wasn't feeling well.
That's responsible.
But, like, we had stuff that we needed... I needed information from her to do my job. It was so weird. Such a weird situation. So we'll see if she shows up tomorrow. But on the plus side, I'm now working from home all the time.
Nice. But how are you feeling? Because you're clearing your throat a little bit. You feeling like, do you have COVID?
No, I tested negative.
Again?
Again, I know, right? I know. I don't know why I'm clearing my throat so much. Sorry, guys.
That's okay.
But the studio didn't want to test us because for some reason they think accounting isn't important at all. And I'm like, so I kind of, because like, I didn't really care that much. I figured we were all fine, but I knew that my fork boss and then our head boss, that's just going to be her name from now on, fork boss.
Fork boss, I love it.
So I knew that they're much more sensitive about COVID stuff, like, because she has elderly parents and he's just a weirdo. But, like, so, I mean, not that it's bad, but just, like, they're very strict about things in a certain way, but then really lax about it in another way. So I'm like, fine, I understand it if you're going to be strict. Like, I totally get that. But then, like, be consistent about it here, people. So they're trying to convince us, like, oh, it's fine. Like, we'll be fine because we weren't around this person for more than 15 minutes unmasked at a time or whatever, which is according to the thing is the thing. And I was like, oh, really? So I have to sit here for 12 hours a day in a KN95 mask that's so uncomfortable. I have to answer all these COVID protocols every morning before I come into work. I have to do all of these steps. And I'm like, and you're telling me that when somebody actually has COVID here, you're not going to get me tested to make sure I don't have COVID? Like, I just spent the weekend with my sister and my friend. Like, if I have COVID, I need to let them know that they're sick, right? Or potentially. Yeah. So I made this big stink about it, and I was like, I'm working from home from now on. Like, I can do it, and I don't think this is a safe workplace. And I'm like, that's what we call working it to your advantage.
Well.
But it's true. Like, I don't need to be in the office. It's so stupid. No. I can do all my work from home. Before. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, give me my sweatpants, damn it. I don't want to ever wear normal clothes again.
Yeah. I think there's going to be quite a... You know, yeah, and it just goes back. I think I mentioned this before that, like, the productivity in the government, and my sister works for the government here, and productivity increased like an insane amount
Yeah.
When people were working from home.
Yes.
And they don't care because they're like, come downtown. We had this chat, but like, side note, I feel so bad that you find KN95s uncomfortable because I find them so comfortable. Like, I get all cozy and happy in them. Like,
the
I love
ones
them.
We had were brutal. Like,
oh, that stinks.
They were so tight and like, and were like tight on your ears and you couldn't really do the elastics. And now every other studio that I've worked for gave us a whole little kit. So they gave us the little spacer things for the back that you can like clip them onto so that it's not on your ears. Like, all these different things, right? And this one did not do any of that. And it was only the uncomfortable masks that we got. And I'm like, okay. Nice. And we had big signs on our doors saying, nobody enter here, like, accounting only. We weren't supposed to have people in the office because we're supposed to be a paperless show. But we had people, like, coming in and out constantly. Like, a revolving door, basically. And then they refused to test us. I'm like, you can't have it both ways. Like,
yeah.
Really? Oh, so that's been my last couple of weeks of frustrations. But now I'm working from home, so it's good. It's all worked out.
Yeah, it's all
just
good.
Fine. Yeah. So, who goes first this week?
I actually don't.
I think I go first because you, we did, last week we did a bit of a weird.
You did forks.
I did forks.
So, isn't it me?
But I did forks second. Oh, yeah, I guess.
No, it's, you only did forks.
I only did forks, I guess. I kind of just assumed
Hold on,
that
let's
those
go back
two episodes
to pizza and cooking competitions. Oh, crud, I don't remember. I think you did pizza last, so then I guess you would go first in our double con. Yeah, go first. I don't care.
Okay. I guess it doesn't really matter. Do you feel like going first?
No, I'm good.
Okay. Okay, I'll do mine because I did this research quite a few weeks ago. And I haven't looked at it since then. So this will be a little bit surprising for both of us. So strap in, guys.
Surprising this is gonna be interesting. Yeah,
who knows? And what? In my, I saved it. I did it while I was at work. So like, I'm really just displaying what a good employee I am on this episode. But I
you start reading like just these numbers.
Yeah, exactly. 1 + 1 = 2. I was going to say 1. Oh, this is why I should be fired. But I, in my title, like, I saved it as a draft in my email folder. And in my title was, like the topic. And then it's done enough was after it.
Oh,
and I'm like, oh, no. So I apologize in advance for this trailing off at the end. Who knows what's in here? It's somewhat
Honestly,
interesting, so here we go.
Will it really be worse than any of my worst? No. I get it.
Although it's funny because I told Greg the topic. He was like, oh, what topic are you recording today? And I told him what it was, and he's like, oh, okay. Like, so not interested. He's like, you should do this topic. It sounds interesting. And I was like, what? Thanks.
No. You know what? Time for a Carla lecture. Lecture number 35 on this episode. Greg, you listen to me. You can't pick and choose what's interesting.
No.
I can guarantee every topic in the world is going to have at least one interesting fact.
Totally.
And if the fact that it is completely boring and uninteresting is the interesting fact, then so be it.
Well, and I think because when I started talking to him about it, he was like, oh, yeah, I hadn't even thought that that was a thing that was created. And I was like, oh, see? And then he was like, okay, he came around.
Why did you let me lecture for 30
Because he
seconds?
Deserved the lecture.
True. That's
You're
true.
Not wrong. He deserved
Thanks.
It. Okay, so I'm doing the origin of clothing sizes.
Oh, my gosh.
Because I actually came about doing this because I was listening to an episode of The Dollop where they talk about Brooks Brothers. It's actually a really good episode.
Ooh, yeah.
But they talk about how Brooks Brothers was one of the first like suit companies in the States that created standard sizes for men's suits. And it made me think, I was like, oh, yeah, I guess that's something that needed to be created. And why do we have
but
the numbering
men,
system that we have?
Things, I find that already like mind-blowing because that's the one thing that kind of has already like it maintains the like tailored thing, right? Like
most
men will try to
get
a
degree
at some point.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I was like, okay, what happened with all this? So I talk a little bit about men's stuff, but most of the stuff that I found interesting was the women's sizing, because that's kind of crazy.
Because it's so exciting. I have been, like, I don't know if it's all the iron I'm taking, but is the word voracious, where you just, like, are consuming, I don't know what it is. Like, I have watched, I think, every single documentary on Netflix just yesterday.
You're like, I gotta get caught up on my Netflix.
It's like my brain was like, I'm just watching everything. It's like this wonderful like reawakening. I'm like, oh my God, I'm interested again.
That's so
and
nice.
And one
That's
of them nice was a little feeling. Right, because mm-hmm. I was dead inside. But like, yeah. One of them was about Chanel Haute Couture stuff, like the show.
Yeah.
The lead up to the thing. And I was just like, and I was just so in my head with all the clothing and everything, like seamstresses and like.
Cool.
And then I thought about like, oh no, okay, continue. I'm very excited about this topic, you guys.
Okay, hopefully it doesn't let you down. I wouldn't know. Yeah, we'll find out. We'll both find out.
It could be the iron brain.
Yeah, you're just so excited about everything. History, yes.
I am.
That's good. You're the exact opposite of Greg.
I know.
Got two extremes here.
Greg takes some iron.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so up until the 19th century, clothing was made to measure. All clothing was made to measure. So every piece of clothing made was tailored specifically to fit each customer. Or it was just like a generic whatever, like a frock or whatever.
No way.
Yeah. They didn't have any like made, like mass produced.
Poor people would just buy fabric. Like remember a Little House on the Prairie? They were always like, exactly. And they had to make their own clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. So garments were made individually and were generally available to a limited number of wealthy people. So like the really fancy stuff that was like, you know.
Right.
More than just like a frock. I'm going to, let's see how many times I say that word in this episode. Twice now so far.
But like with silks and laces and all that, right?
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So following a measuring session, the tailor would pattern, cut, and assemble each item from scratch. In the early 19th century, tailors started sharing their methods by publishing them, which was when they discovered how all over the place they were with their measurements and the total lack of sizing standards that they had. Because, like, in the 1800s, when, like, people were publishing more stuff, like the printing press that kind of stuff, they're like, okay, cool, I'm going to talk about this and publish maybe a pattern. And, like, they started doing it just like every other industry did at
that
time.
It's so weird that made-to-measure people would care.
Yeah.
Like, you're just measuring individuals. What the hell do you care if they're
But I think they
sizes?
Realized that they were measuring things slightly differently, like slightly off. And I think when you're...
just using their hands. Ma'am, you've got 3 hands waist.
Yeah, exactly. But I think like during that time, just in general, because of the Industrial Revolution, everybody was moving towards more automation and more mass production for certain things, right? So it's just a natural...
We should have done history of rulers and tape measure before we did this. Because now I am wondering, did they have tape? Why don't they have tape? Like, the standard, I'm losing it. Okay.
I know. I love the idea of it's just someone measuring with their hands. They have really small hands or really big hands. It's like totally off. Okay.
Oh my gosh.
So there is some evidence that Roman military uniforms were made as ready-to-wear garments as early as 1400 BC.
Sorry. They just literally took the like uniform off a dead soldier and just had to wear it, probably.
Yeah, exactly. It fits, and it's like, it doesn't at all.
It doesn't, yeah.
But it doesn't seem to have spread any further than the military at that time. So like it was like just for military because there were so many guys. The first ready-to-wear clothing that was made on a large scale was military uniforms, again, for men in the 1800s. So that's really the first time that there was mass production of uniforms of certain sizes, like clothing of certain sizes made in advance.
That makes a ton of sense, and I never would have thought of that.
Yeah, I know, right? So the Napoleonic Wars happened between 1803 to 1815. The Crimean War was 1853 to 56. and the American Civil War was 1861 to 1865. So all those wars required an unprecedented number of uniforms, and so they had to like come up with some kind of sizing to figure out, like, you know, this is a smaller man or whatever. Like, obviously they didn't fit them very well, but
you know, just generally. But don't get small hands Taylor.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So the reason it was able to become a thing at this time, when it stalled, like it previously had stalled in the Roman times, right? They'd done it for some of the military uniforms, but it hadn't really gone any farther than that. But the reason that it was able to become a bigger thing in the 1800s was because the need for a lot of uniforms coincided with the Industrial Revolution.
The darn Industrial Revolution. Yeah. Here we go.
Two inventions helped to create the infrastructure for mass-produced clothing, and they were...
The mill. No, not the mill.
The treadmill.
Not the flour mill. The thing. The weaving thing.
The cotton ginny?
Yes!
I don't know. That's not on here, but yeah, where's the cotton ginny in all of this, damn it?
Right. Steam engine.
It's the only one I remembered from whatever class that was that we did in the Industrial Revolution. I was like, the cotton ginny. It was important for some
and
reason.
James Watt.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the two inventions were the roller spinning machine that was invented in 1738 and the power loom that was invented in 1784.
Loom! Didn't I say loom before I...
Maybe. I don't know. I have no evidence of that.
Doesn't matter.
Or does it? And so this is the time when the first full body sizing systems were developed.
Did you say power loom?
Yeah. I don't know what either of those things are. I didn't look them up. But
it's
they
like,
were invented
like
and they helped.
Like a machine loom. Like,
yeah.
Rather than a... Dang.
Yeah. Okay, so in order to make the military uniforms in factories away from the soldiers on the battlefields, uniform makers came up with a simple sizing system based on male chest circumference. So because the tailors weren't, they weren't like on the sidelines being like, sure, come over here, Tommy. They're like, no, we just need general sizes and then we'll make them away from here and we'll bring them
the
to you.
The battle stops for like a tailoring break.
Basically.
Tea time,
but I feel like the fact that they had to like mention this means that it probably did happen that way before.
Yeah, that's true.
Like how many tailors have died in wars because they were basically on the battlefield with them?
Stitch my jodhpurs. Yeah.
Okay, so this eventually expanded into the everyday market. And by the end of the 19th century, most of the urban male populations in Europe and North America were wearing mass-produced standardized clothing.
Hmm.
So the initial suit designs were simple and a size range could be created around chest measurements. And also the men's suit styles didn't change very much, so it was much easier for them to have this mass-produced clothing.
Right.
Because it was a lot more basic. So it took a lot longer for sizing standards to be created for women.
Mm.
Not only was it harder to figure out standard sizes for women, but there was a bit of a taboo around ready-to-wear clothing because it was seen as lower class and cheaper.
Mm.
So, and because I think I talk about this later, but I'm going to talk about it. Oh, no, I do talk about it later. Okay, I'll save it for later. By the late 19th century, this taboo started to lift a little bit because fancy department stores were starting to offer affordable copies of coveted French fashions. So they were like starting to get a bit clever of nice. Like, okay, we'll just copy it a little bit and sell it. And then the women were like, okay, we're on board with this because we can fit in with the higher classes, but for a cheaper price. It's like Marge when she, on The Simpsons, when she buys that Chanel suit and totally fits in at the country club.
Gosh, I love that episode.
Okay, so manufacturers were totally on board with mass producing clothing for women. Like they were all over it. Because they realized they could make a ton of money from it, right?
Yeah.
But they had trouble figuring out what standard sizes they should do. since the same chest measurement system that worked for men did not translate to women at all. So while two women could be the same size bust, they could have completely different measurements at their hips and waist. Mm. And it was all over the place. It never necessarily coincided that if you have bigger hips, then your bust would be bigger as well. Like, there was no rhyme or reason. There were so many different sizes.
Why would chest thing work for men? Don't they have big bellies and...
Well, generally, like men
broad
have...
Broad shoulders or not broad shoulders, scrawny, chubby.
Yeah, but generally, it's a bit easier. Like, they don't have, I think, as wide of a variety of sizing as women do. Because women are curvier. Like, that's just their bodies are curvy. Yeah. Right? Okay, so a ton of new ill-fitting clothing was being returned to retailers, which was making it really uneconomical for them. So they tried doing the mass producing and tried sizing, but it wasn't working. So women were buying these clothes that were made, and they're like, this doesn't fit me at all. And they were returning it. So the stores were like, well, we don't know what to do with this now. So they were losing a ton of money.
Of change rooms.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been good, too. Sorry, I don't know what's going on with my throat today.
No worries.
COVID. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so seamstresses could make alterations to the clothing after they bought this ready-to-wear stuff. But if they did that, it would end up costing more than the custom-made clothing that they used to get. So women were like, we're not going to do that. We're just going to return it. Like, screw this. This is stupid. So the loss of profit for the retailers was really the driving force behind moving to standardized sizes.
Oh.
Because they were like, okay, we're onto something. We're selling a whole bunch of this stuff.
I never would have guessed that it was loss of profit like that way.
Yeah.
You'd think the only thing that would spur them on is just profit. And like, okay, away we go. Right?
Yeah.
That's so backwards and hilarious.
I know. Isn't that so funny that they actually like tried it and made a go of it? But had no idea what they were doing. Okay, so that was just general, and that was kind of happening all over the place, mostly Europe, but also in America. Like, it was kind of everywhere. It's just a general thing. But now we're going to jump to America and talk about their sizing stuff, because it's nuts. As per usual with everything, all of American history. Okay, so in 1939, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, so the USDA, launched a year-long study called, quote, Women's Measurements for Garment and Pattern Construction. They worked together with the Bureau of Home Economics, which is like a funny bureau to have.
I know. And I've seen it a couple times where I'm like, wait, what?
I know. I just imagine like home ec class in junior high.
Yeah.
It's like you had to make I made cookies. Pajama pants that I never finished. Yeah, and then baked cookies. Okay, so they worked together with this Bureau of Home Economics to study the weight and 58 body measurements of 15,000 women across 7 states in the U.S.
Okay.
So you might think like, that's not all that many women necessarily for the whole population, and it's only in 7 states.
Yeah.
But there were other things that were wrong with the study as well. So the data pool was really skewed because they were only really interested in taking the information for white women from a very specific socioeconomic class.
Oh, okay.
It was also based on the assumption that adult women had the then preferred hourglass shape that had become popularized by the corsets of the Victorian era. So they were like just making that, like kind of making that as the standard that everybody wants to go by. But the hourglass figure only accounted for 8% of the adult female population in all of the states at that time. So there were very few people that actually had like it. What?
I thought, like, people, like when I would watch, like, 60s go-go kind of movies, like the bikini thing where they're dancing on the beach, right? They all seem to have that same figure. And I was like, do women's bodies just change? Like, I didn't get it for the longest time where I'm like, what? How did their body change?
But it's also, like, if you
look like that.
But if you look now, like if you watch TV now, and these women on TV are tiny, like teeny, teeny, tiny stick figures.
Yeah.
And so anybody looking at stuff now would think, like, are all women just these, like, tiny stick figures?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
yeah.
What is that trend?
So funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just funny that I assumed everyone looked like that.
But it is, because that's what you see, right? In the media. That's all that we're seeing. Yeah. It's crazy. Okay. So once they analyzed all of this data that they had collected that's skewed from the beginning, but whatever, they still collected it, they decided that just 5 measurements were enough to determine the size and shape of a woman. And those 5 measurements were weight, height, bust girth, waist girth, and hip girth. So you've got your weight, your height, your bust, your waist, and your hips. Mm-hmm. So they eventually ended up deciding to leave weight out when they were deciding on sizing ranges because, and this is a quote from the report, quote, retail stores and homes frequently do not have scales, and it is conceivable that women would object to telling their weights more than to giving, say, their bust measurements. So, could you imagine if they had left that in and you'd have to state your weight whenever you went to buy clothes? Like, that weight was something that was listed on the label? Like, that would be so crazy.
Although, I think everyone feels that when they look at just small, medium, large, right?
I think so now, and I definitely talk about that later. Yeah. Oh. I think there's definitely that, like, connotation there, too, for sure. But, like, it's different from an actual, like, actually having to say what you weigh. I'm big boned. Leave me alone. Big boned. Okay, so the other thing that came out of this report was the suggestion that they create an arbitrary sizing term rather than a system based on actual numerical values. So, for example, using small, medium, large, or 2, 4, 6, rather than specific measurements of like 17 inches or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
And they also said that manufacturers should only produce every second clothing size, which meant that they could make fewer sizes while still appealing to the masses so that the manufacturers wouldn't have to make so many sizes and then potentially not sell them, right? Mm-hmm. You're kind of like encompassing the thing. So there was a lot of stuff. There were some things I could have gone down a big rabbit hole here of like some of the original sizing kind of types that they created. They almost created these types of people, like the petite, like the girl type was this like petite, really small, whatever. And then they had like the names for them of like almost what type of woman they were.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You know how they did back in the day of like.
Oh, for sure.
This is Jane. She's all whatever. Yeah. Hourglass and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. So all of that research was done and they ended up releasing a really dry statistical report telling people what they thought, the manufacturers, what they thought they should do. And it wasn't really actually used for all that much until the Mail Order Association of America asked the National Institute of Standards and Technology to provide a standard sizing system. So that was the mail order people. What?
Mail Order Association. Did you talk about that with the catalog thing?
Maybe. I don't know.
What on earth?
You'd think I'd remember that, but I don't. But it makes sense that it would be the catalog stuff, right? They're like, can we have some set standards so people know what size to order because we're sending it out to them, whatever, right? Hmm. So they used all of the existing data, and then they also analyzed information from the military because they had a lot of information from the military for all the uniforms by that point, and children's studies to create sizing standards for both genders all the way from infants to adults.
Oh.
It took quite a few years for the data to totally be compiled, and in 1958, the new sizing standards were published.
1958?
Yes. So major retailers quickly jumped on board with these sizes because they're like, okay, cool, we've got something that's a set standard. Let's do this. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
So this study started in 1939, and all the sizing standards that they set were the basis for all of U.S. clothing sizes for over 30 years. So those standards that were from, like, totally skewed data that was, like, not accurate for all of women anywhere, that's what they used for over 30 years. Okay, so I got a bit of a fun fact here. So although this is not an exhaustive list, other established sizing standards include China's sizing standards, which were created in 1981. South Korea's height-based standards were created in 1990. And the 1996 Alpha standards, so SMLXL, which is based on European sizing conventions. So that was 1996.
Oh my gosh.
I feel like that was earlier than that, which is why I kind of included it earlier. But maybe not. I don't know. Okay. So by 1983... the year
Wait,
after
so
you and
in
I
Europe,
were born.
They started the Alpha thing, like S.
It, no, the 96? SML, like the small, medium, large, extra large, was based on European sizing conventions, but they were just the Alpha standards
sorry,
that
like,
were created.
All those clothing tags that are like Europe, it's like usually the number, like 6, 8. Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry, I was confused.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't totally know. I kind of copied and pasted that. I apologize. I don't have the full information for it.
Oh no,
it,
but... I think it makes sense.
Okay, so by 1983, the flawed North American Women's Measurement Guide was abandoned altogether in favor of a trend now known as vanity sizing.
Oh, what? 1983?
1983.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought that was way later, like when we were like in high school or something. Jeez,
yeah.
Gross.
So this trend became super popular in North America and the UK. Vanity sizing, for people who don't know, is basically the manufacturers making the sizes bigger so that consumers feel that they are a smaller size than they are. For example, in the 50 years between 1958 and 2008, a U.S. size 8 has expanded by up to 6 inches. Vanity sizing is basically designed to satisfy the wearer's wishes to appear thin and feel better about themselves.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So in the 1950s, I'd be size like 9,003.
Same.
Well, maybe not, but like, everyone would be.
Everyone would be. Yeah. Yeah. So a study from 2003 measured over 1,000 pairs of women's pants and found that pants from more expensive brands tended to be smaller than those from cheaper brands with the same number size.
Yeah.
Fun fact, the American designer Nicole Miller was the first one to use size zero. And she says that, quote, one year our sales manager wanted to size the clothes bigger and we started calling the size eights a six. Then the result of that was losing the smaller customer, so we had to add the zero. End quote.
Okay.
Yeah. Stanley Marcus of Neiman Marcus worked with the government on standardizing the sizes, like, way back in the day. He kind of was part of that group that was helping to standardize the sizes. But now he says that, quote, there isn't a standardized size anymore. I can put models in size 2 to 10 in all of our fashion shows. It just depends on the maker of the clothes. End quote. Isn't that crazy? Like, reading that stuff, I'm like, so size does not matter at all. Like, so much of it is on there. Like, when I look at the sizes of my clothes, I'm like, man, I used to be a size whatever. And now I'm, like, so much bigger. Yeah. And it's like, yes, I know my clothing is actually, like, I know I've gained weight over the years, right? But it's not, like, seeing that number just is so triggering sometimes, and it doesn't need to be.
Oh, big time. No, all they need to do is just show, like, little, don't use sizes, just have, like, slightly bigger, more roomy, whatever, right? Like,
exactly.
So you know, like, oh, okay, put it in separate piles, like the different sizes, so people can just choose, but they don't have to look at the numbers. Because I think a huge annoyance is when you get the size you think you're going to fit into, and then you have to, like, you don't fit into it, then you, like, go back, pick a new size, then go back, and it's like this back and forth constantly, and it's just really annoying.
It's so annoying because what's the point of having sacks? Yeah, like what's the point of having sizes if none of it's accurate anyway?
Yeah.
So marketers have figured.
I just want to wear a muumuu.
Yeah, same. Marketers have figured out that the smaller the size that fits, the more likely the shopper is to buy it. So here we go with marketing again. And this is the very last fun fact for my thing. Fun fact, the UK's chief medical officer has suggested that vanity sizing has contributed to the normalization of obesity in society. Because they're like, oh, it's okay, you still fit into a size, whatever. But they're making it okay for people to be bigger and bigger because we're all eating this garbage food and, like, it's hard to, you know, we're living sedentary lifestyles and we're eating a bunch of garbage that they've all shoved down our throats. So.
Right.
Huh. But that's the end of it. Sorry, it was a little bit short, but that's where clothing sizes came from.
Oh, my God. And it's none so messed up. What I expected.
I know.
It's so messed up. Yeah. I mean, like I said, like you sort of do need some kind of something, like I said, in terms of, like you need the options in the clothing store. That's nice.
Yeah.
Although there's some places where they don't give you the options. You know that they have size small and that's it. And they're never actually going to put medium on the shelf.
There are entire stores. Like there's this store called Brandy Melville that like my nieces wanted to go to all the time, and they're like the entire store is one size and it's all teeny tiny like preteen size, but they all know that they're like it's one size, so whenever they come to visit me here they would go to that store and they'd wait in line for forever. There'd be a lineup out the door.
Oh my gosh.
And they'd buy stuff for their friends because they didn't have one back like where they were living. And they're like, so they'd buy stuff and they're like, well, I hope it fits them because we can't return it because we don't live here, kind of thing.
Oh,
so,
my gosh.
Yeah, but I'm like, side note, one size.
It's crazy. Amazing that teenagers are always like, you know, fighting the system, but they're the most, like, they're the biggest sheeps.
Mm-hmm.
Sheeps? The sheep's a word? Oh, God.
Sheeps is not a word.
Well, maybe it is. All right. I'm not
it
a sheep.
It is now.
Like, just. Yeah, they will just go and spend and spend and spend at the one store that they all mm-hmm. think is trendy. And it just hit me now where I'm like, you guys, why are you like giving into this like one brand?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like go find different cool brands and then really be cool.
Yeah.
I don't get it because
that was
it's
so,
not like you can protect
so
your
being a teenager
status with because other kids are quickly going to get their hands on this stuff. Right?
Yeah.
Like, let's pretend it's like that Abercrombie or like, I don't know, what was cool back in the day? Tommy Hilfiger or something. I don't know, right?
Oh my gosh, we used to wear those Club Monaco sweatshirts.
Right.
And then remember Guess jeans where you had to have like the right kind of Guess jeans.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was so stupid. I just think like that's just society and that's like being a teenager is like all you want is to fit in, but like be...
Yeah.
Still, like, stand out and be the cool one and be admired,
but
also,
also,
like, be safe
in.
And be exactly like everybody else, right?
Yeah, just kind of... Boy, that's dumb.
But it's why humans are stupid. We're so dumb. It's like you don't see any other animals doing that kind of garbage, right?
Well...
Okay, guys, thanks for listening. Remember to like, subscribe, and review. You can follow us on Instagram. We are at podcast.or.something. Or you can write to us at podcastorsomething@gmail.com. And we will talk to you later or something. Bye.
Bye.